CJSF 90.1, broadcasting live from up on Burnaby Mountain. At CJSF, we air public service announcements for not-for-profit community groups, organizations, and events. And we encourage you to submit a PSA and to please send it by email to cjsfpsa@sfu.ca. Be sure to include the details, like the name and contact information for the organization, date, time, location, and a short description of the event or service. Send your PSA information to cjsfpsa@sfu.ca.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
We're in the midst of an unprecedented spiritual renaissance as we rediscover the timeless wisdom of the ages, while at the same time are no longer limited to the faith of our particular culture. We might ask ourselves, what are the essential teachings that can shed light on who we truly are? Today we'll be looking into how we may go beyond the conventional beliefs that have become so deeply embedded in the way we seem to experience ourselves and the world with our guest, Rupert Spira. Rupert Spira is a preeminent non-dual teacher. At an early age, he was deeply interested in the nature of reality. At 17, he learned to meditate and began a 20-year period of study and practice in the classical Advaita Vedanta tradition. During this time, he immersed himself in the teachings of Ouspensky, Krishnamurti, Rumi, Ramana Maharshi, and others, until he met his teacher, Francis Lucille, in 1997. There he was introduced to what is known as the direct path. Spira lives in the United Kingdom and holds regular meetings and retreats in Europe and the United States. He's the author of many books and audio and video programs, including The Transparency of Things, Presence, Volume 1 and 2. Volume 1 is The Art and Peace of Happiness, and Volume 2 is The Intimacy of All Experience. Join us for the next hour as we explore the eternal and infinite nature of the self with our guest, Rupert Spira. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Rupert, welcome.
Thank you, Justine. Very glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you. May I call you Rupert?
Please do.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I would like to begin. I mentioned in the very beginning that you are a non-dual teacher and or a teacher of non-dualism. Not everyone is familiar with that term, so I'm wondering if you can enlighten us with what that term means.
Yes. The term duality refers to the belief that there are two essential realities to our experience, one, matter, and the other, mind. Moreover, our culture, our world culture, is founded on the belief that mind, or consciousness, is derived from matter. So this is the fundamental assumption that underpins our world culture. The non-dual tradition and the non-dual teaching is the essential teaching that you find at the heart of all the great religious and spiritual traditions. So all the great religious and spiritual traditions have this core non-dual understanding at their heart. The non-dual understanding is based on the recognition that there is a single reality to everything that is known or experienced, that underlying all appearances, all separate objects, others, and the world is a single, indivisible, and unlimited reality, which could be called consciousness. In the religious traditions, it is called God. It is also the nature of what we essentially are. So it is also called I, or the self.
Okay, and when we think of the self, we think of that material bodily self, that self that I can touch and feel and
yes,
and see.
That's very true. Most people feel that their essential self is their body, in which consciousness is supposed to be located. But if we explore our experience, we see very quickly that objective experience consists of a flow of thoughts, images, memories, feelings, sensations, perceptions. But there is something that is aware of all of these. For instance, now, you and all your listeners are experiencing a flow of thoughts, the sound of this voice, whatever perceptions of the world are present, the sensations of their body, for instance, the tingling of the hands or the face or the feet. But all of these objects of experience are known. We are aware of them. We are aware of our thoughts. We are aware of our feelings and sensations. We are aware of our perceptions. So there is this element of experience that we call I, which refers to that which knows or is aware of all thoughts, feelings, sensations, and perceptions. We could say that it is the knowing element in all experience. So, for instance, if I were to ask you now, are you aware of your thoughts?
Yes.
What would you respond? You'd respond,
right,
yes,
absolutely,
of course.
I'm aware of my...
If I were to ask you, are you aware of the sound of this voice? What would you reply?
Yes.
Are you aware of the sight of this room?
Yes.
Are you aware of the tingling sensation at the soles of your feet?
Oh, okay. I hadn't thought about that, but now that you think about it,
you feel a tingling there or a tingling behind the eyes. So in each of these statements, you've said, I'm aware of my thoughts. I'm aware of the sound of this voice. I'm aware of the sight of this room. I'm aware of the sensation of my hands on each other. So what is it that is aware of all of these? Whatever it is that is aware of a thought is obviously not itself a thought.
So, I mean, normally I think of it as I am I, Justine, this
Perfect.
Body is aware of it.
No,
it's normally...
You're quite right that I am aware of these thoughts, feelings, sensations, etc. But then we make a leap and we say, I, this body, is aware of my thoughts. Now, the body you experience as a flow of sensations and perceptions, yes?
Yes.
A sensation is not itself aware. A sensation cannot hear something. It is awareness, what we call awareness, that is aware of experience. And I is the common name for awareness. That's why we say, I am aware of my thoughts. I am aware of the sound of this voice. I am aware of my emotions. So I is the name we give to that element of our experience that is aware. It's not the body that is aware. We are aware of the body.
All right, right. The body is not aware. There's something else going on. There's an awareness. There's a perception. There is something
exactly.
going on. And I, you know, I'm kind of pointing to my head. It seems to come because it's usually out of the seeing of my eyes that I become aware of my surroundings. So I think of it as some bodily sensation.
That is why almost everybody believes that whatever it is that is seeing or knowing their experience is located just behind the eyes, in the brain. But strangely, no neurologist or brain surgeon has ever found consciousness in the brain. In fact, one of the most vexing questions for science at the moment is, how is consciousness derived from the brain?
Right.
I would suggest, and in fact the non-dual traditions in general suggest, that consciousness is not derived from the brain. It's not a product of matter. In the non-dual traditions, it is suggested that consciousness is the primary and fundamental reality, and that everything is derived from consciousness. Consciousness is not derived from things.
Okay, like I'm thinking that like philosophers would say, right, consciousness is pervasive and matter and energy are quantifiable. So are you saying that, all right, if consciousness is, are you saying all that is, and that there is no matter, there are no physical things, there's no material world?
Well, it's very interesting. Physicists have been looking for this stuff called matter for 2,500 years. And the more they look for it, the less they find it. The less like matter seems to be.
So this table isn't really a table, or it doesn't really exist?
It doesn't exist in the way that we normally think of it. That is, as an object with its own independent reality made out of dead inert stuff called matter. But that doesn't mean that your experience of the table, or indeed this room or the world, is an illusion. Our experience is very real. Our experience is undeniably real. Even if we're having a dream or a hallucination, nevertheless, that experience is real. When we see a mirage in the desert, the mirage is an illusion, but there is something real to the illusion. That is, it is made of light. It is not made of water. So although it is said in the non-dual traditions that the world is an illusion, what it means is the world as it is normally conceived, as a multiplicity and diversity of objects made out of dead inert stuff called matter, that world does not exist, and indeed scientists cannot find it. But that doesn't mean that this illusory world doesn't have a reality to it. It does. There is something real about our experience of the world. And when we deeply investigate what that is, we find consciousness.
Okay, that's getting down to it. So does that mean that there is a relative world, like when we're functioning and we're eating and we're making love and when we're visiting with friends, that's a relative world that we're functioning in, and then there's another world that's more ultimate or absolute or all consciousness, or there's no division?
Yes, you could say that, as long as we follow that statement by the understanding that there is no real distinction between the relative and the absolute. They are different points of view rather than different realities. Let me give you an analogy.
Before you do that, I want to get that analogy about the relative and the absolute, that they're not really so different. I'm here. I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with teacher and author Rupert Spira, and he's the author of two volumes, Presence, The Art and Peace of Happiness, and The Intimacy of All Experience. And if you want to know more about his work, you can go to his website, Rupert Spira, SPIRA.com, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. Thank you. I'm here with teacher Rupert Spira. He's the author of Presence, Volume 1, The Art of Peace and Happiness, and Presence, Volume 2, The Intimacy of All Experience. And Rupert, we were just talking about how the relative and the absolute are not really different, or you were going to give an analogy.
Yes, I wanted to give you an analogy of what takes place in a dream, because this very well illustrates the non-dual understanding. Imagine that a character called Mary falls asleep, and in her dream, she dreams that the streets of Paris. So the streets of Paris appear to Mary in her mind. However, in order to see the streets of Paris, Mary has to enter her own imagination and view the streets of Paris from a separate subject of experience located on the streets of Paris. And if you notice, whenever we have a dream, we imagine the dreamed world within our own mind, but we then enter our own imagination and view the dreamed world.
So we're walking down that street
from the point of view of someone walking down the street. Now, for the ease of conversation, I'm going to call the person walking down the streets of Paris Jane, just so that it's easy to discuss. So Mary falls asleep in, let's say, New York, and she dreams that she's Jane walking down the streets of Paris. Now, from Jane's point of view, her experience is divided into two essential ingredients. Matter on the outside, out of which all objects, others, and the world are made. And mind on the inside, out of which her thoughts, images, and feelings are made. So from Jane's perspective, reality consists of these two distinct entities or ingredients, matter on the outside and mind on the inside. So everything Jane experiences, she experiences relative to her point of view located as Jane's body. When Jane closes her eyes, the streets of Paris disappear. When she opens them again, the streets of Paris reappear. So Jane reasonably concludes whatever it is that is perceiving the streets of Paris must live just behind my eyes. The same thing happens when she closes her ears, etc. And this leads Jane to believe and feel that the awareness with which she knows her experience resides in her brain and is a byproduct of her brain. Now, Jane steps out onto the streets in Paris. She doesn't see a cab coming. This cab screeches to a halt, peeps the horn, and Mary wakes up in bed in New York. And Mary ponders her dream. She thinks, when the dream was going on, I was Jane in the dream. And from Jane's point of view, the world seems to be outside of me and separate from me, and all the other people seem to be separate from me. I felt alone on the streets of Paris, and everyone and everything else were separate from me. But now that I've woken up, I realize, in fact, that everything in the dream, both the thoughts, images, and feelings that Jane was experiencing inside of herself, and all the objects, people, and the world that Jane experienced outside of herself, in fact, took place in my own mind, in Mary's own mind. And Mary's own mind is one seamless, indivisible whole. It's not really divided into matter on the outside and mind on the inside. The entire dream was made out of Mary's indivisible consciousness.
And yet, now Jane is awake, and she's looking around her bedroom, and
yes,
suddenly there she is again,
yes,
with objects. And
that's right. But when Jane asks herself the question, what is it that knows or is aware of my experience? Yeah, Jane is looking around her bedroom. She asks herself, what is it that knows or is aware of my experience? In other words, another way we could say it is, What is the nature of the knowing with which I know my experience? Jane thinks that that knowing is located inside her body, which indeed in turn is located inside the world, inside the room, inside the world. But when Mary wakes up, Mary realizes the knowing with which Jane knew her experience wasn't located inside Jane or even inside Jane's world. It was located in Mary's mind.
So are you saying in this analogy that Mary represents
consciousness?
Consciousness.
Yes.
All pervasive consciousness.
Yes.
That is,
yes,
infinite awareness.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking of another analogy that I've heard you use. You use like we live in a bubble, somehow floating in this infinite awareness.
Yes, in a sense, you're right. If we use the analogy of the dream, Mary falling asleep in New York, dreaming that she's Jane on the streets of Paris, and Mary realizing that Jane's entire mind was, as it were, precipitated within her own mind. Now, what the non-dual teaching suggests is that each of our minds are precipitated within the same field of infinite consciousness. In other words, the knowing with which you know your experience and the knowing with which I know my experience are the same infinite, indivisible consciousness. Everything you know, that is your thoughts, feelings, sensations, perceptions, they are personal and private. Everything I know, my own thoughts, feelings, sensations, images, memories, they are personal and private. You have no access to them. But what the non-dual teaching says is that the essence of each of our minds is the same.
So is this like, is this the God that we're searching for? Is this...
In the religious traditions, it is said to be, yes, this ultimate reality is called God. This is why in the Sufi tradition, they say, whosoever knows their self knows their Lord. Translate this to the analogy of Mary and Jane. If Jane were to recognize the true nature of her own mind, in other words, if she was to recognize the fact that her own mind is not limited to, nor does it live within her own body, but in fact, her mind is really Mary's infinite mind in which the entire world appears. If Jane were to recognize the essential nature of her mind, she would recognize at the same time the essential nature of the universe that she perceives. In other words, the self that perceives and the universe that is perceived share a common reality.
All right. How does this realization or this an experience of this lead us to live a better life? How does it improve our life?
I'm going to answer your question indirectly to begin with. When we fall in love with someone, or indeed when we simply love someone, do we not feel, to a greater or lesser degree, that we are essentially one with that person? When we fall in love, or when we love someone, is not love the experience of everything that separates us from that person?
It seems to be without barriers.
The barriers fall away. Everything that seemed to separate us, our beliefs, our feelings, etc.
At least at first.
they fall away. So love is the experience of our shared being. Love is the experience of feeling one with the other. Now, could it be that the experience of love is the recognition that what we essentially are is one? Isn't that what love is?
Yes.
The feeling, I am one with you. Well, could it be that that feeling is an an intuition, more than an intuition, but an experience of how things really are. In other words, that we are essentially one, that we share our being. In other words, that there aren't 7 billion beings on the planet. There is one being. And each of us derives our sense of ourself from that shared being.
So that's a good analogy, because I think we've all can remember that feeling of love, of loving, whether it's loving our dog or our cat or loving
whatever
our parents you know, our child especially, that we can feel that. And that's a nice analogy I haven't heard about before.
Yes.
To describe love.
And in fact, it's not just limited to people and animals. Take the experience everybody has had at some stage in their life, the experience walking in the landscape or listening to a piece of music where we say, my breath was taken away. It was breathtakingly beautiful. Or what happens in that moment? I would suggest that exactly the same thing happens as we were describing in the experience of love, that that there is a collapse in that moment in the landscape or listening to the piece of music. I would suggest that in that moment, that whatever it is that separates us from the landscape or the music falls away, and we feel one with nature or one with the music. Almost everybody has had this experience. The common name for that experience is beauty. Mm. When we say, oh, the music was so beautiful, what we are trying to say is, in the moment of listening to it, I disappeared as a separate self. I felt one with the music or the landscape. So I'm suggesting that the experience of beauty is, to objects, the same experience that love is to people and animals. It is an experience of the reality that we all share. That underneath this apparent multiplicity and diversity of objects and selves, there is a single shared reality which most people access through the experience of love and beauty.
I'm here with Rupert Spira, and he is a teacher of non-dualism. He's the author of many books, many audio programs and video programs. His most recent books are Present, Volume 1 and 2. And if you want to know more about his work, you can go to his website, rupertspira.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions